the Battleground State Report with Steve Gill, Michael Patrick Leahy, and Doug Kellett.
And welcome in to the Battleground State Report for this week. I'm Doug Kellett, along with Michael Patrick Leahy. Steve Gill is off this week. And we'll take a look at some of the important news affecting some of the battleground states. And, Michael, that's kind of where we focus, right, is the states are going to make the impact during the upcoming elections.
Exactly. And we've got a website, battlegroundstatenews.com, you can go look at for all these stories. But, you know, most of the media is focused on the wrong thing, right? They're looking at the national polls. Who's up, who's down in the national polls? Well, you know, in 2016, Hillary Clinton won the national vote, 48% to 46%, and yet she got crushed in the Electoral College. So it doesn't really, the national vote is not really what matters. What matters is the vote in each of the 50 states, and even more specifically, there are 17 states that really are up for grabs at varying degrees. And so we focus on those 17 states. Why? Well, because we know 20 states like Texas and Oklahoma and North Dakota, Tennessee, they're going to be Trump states no matter what in 2020. And then 13 states, California, New York, Vermont, they're going to be for whoever the lunatic Democrats nominate. Right? So they're going to be for the loony lefty. And which means, so they're baked in. I mean, they're not going to change at all. So that means there are 17 battleground states, varying degrees of uncertainty about where they're going to go that really matter. And so we talk about what's going on in those 17 battleground states here. And each week, and it's been interesting doing this, Doug, because each week, you know, there's a different ebb and flow as to where he's up, where you think Trump's up or down, or where that Democrat might be doing well or not. And we'll talk about that in a bit. But let me just tell you the states in play of these 17 states that could go either way, varying degrees of toss-upness, shall we say, right now. Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, Indiana, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Iowa, and Missouri in the West, in the Midwest. In the West, it's Nevada, Arizona, New Mexico, and Colorado. In New England, it's Maine and New Hampshire. And in the South, it's Virginia, North Carolina, and Florida. So really, those are the only states that matter. And really, Doug, there are some of those states that really aren't toss-ups. You could say Indiana, yeah, probably not a toss-up these days. Missouri, yeah, probably not a toss-up. These other states, though, they ebb and flow, don't they?
Yeah, they do. And, you know, it's I know we're going to probably talk more about it, but, you know, Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, these are states that President Trump won, you know, in the 2016 election, won them by a close margin, and he really needs to win them again or he's got to pick up other states. So you're right. I mean, there is an ebb and flow to all the, you know, this political stuff because each state, you know, has sort of different priorities. Each state has something that they're more interested in as far as maybe it's the economy or maybe a business or a corporation or, say, a farm state or something like that. So, yeah, I mean, it's a long time between now and the presidential election, but there's there's just a few states really in play, as you point out, and that's those are the ones that we're going to focus on.
Absolutely. And what's interesting about this, Doug, if you look at it, I say the current thinking is of the states that President Trump won among these battleground states, and he won most of these battleground states in 2016. Of the 17, he lost Minnesota. He lost Nevada, Colorado, New Mexico, New Hampshire, Virginia, and most of Maine, except for one vote from one congressional district. But all the others he won. And let's say nothing changed except for, well, if he lost some of these states that are sort of on the margin in the battleground state, well, then he could, in theory, lose the Electoral College vote in 2020. And the three most vulnerable of the battleground states that President Trump won in 2016 are Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania, according to a new Fireside Strategies poll. They did, you know, one of these deals where, and again, I haven't, just because I haven't looked into the details of how they did it. It's a Democratic-leaning poll, so you might kind of take that with a grain of salt. But they claim that President Trump is either tied or behind all of the major Democratic candidates, and the one that he's behind is Joe Biden.
Kind of my experience over the years, Michael, is that a lot of these state polls, the sample is small. It's they're more unreliable, and because we look at the national polls, and people constantly talk about, well, the national polls were wrong in the popular vote. I guess they were fairly close, right?
They were
correct, but the thing is, it's about the individual states, as you point out, and there's not as much polling that's done in these states. So,
no.
This is maybe an indication, maybe that the president's behind him. But it's always the case, I think, when you've got a generic candidate, really.
Exactly.
I mean, when you name the person, then all of a sudden people have to make a choice between, each candidate, like a Hillary Clinton versus mm-hmm. Donald Trump. And I think Donald Trump got the benefit of the doubt a lot of times in the 2016 election, right?
Because he's just so unlikable. Yeah. But in this particular case, even Joe Biden listed as a name, it's a name. But it's the idea of Joe Biden. It's not the actual Joe Biden candidate, right? Because he's not announced yet. And so we'll get back to that more after the break. You're listening to the Battleground State Report. Michael Patrick Leahy and Doug Kellett today.
It's the Battleground State Report with Steve Gill, Michael Patrick Leahy, and Doug Kellett.
And thank you. Welcome back. Doug Kellett, along with Michael Patrick Leahy, on this edition of the Battleground State Report. Steve is off this weekend. We were talking about Michigan, some of these Midwestern states, and how each state is really different when it comes to the politics and the upcoming election. I mean, certain issues may affect the way the presidential race goes in 2020. And so I just want to talk about, for example, Michigan, Wisconsin, specifically, Michael, because you kind of look at these things and you mentioned about a poll that's out there. We don't really know the accuracy of the poll, but it has the president right now losing in those three states if the election were held today. But for example, the economy would play a big role, I would think, in Michigan and Wisconsin. It would play everywhere, but I think especially there. And since the economy is doing well, you would think that would actually maybe work in the favor of President Trump in that regard, right? I mean, there's, it depends on which Democrat candidate he'll be facing.
Yeah, it does. And so we look at this, and so I'll give you the raw data. It's called Firehouse Strategies, and it's sort of you might call it sort of a bunch of the usual rhino suspects, right? In it. By the way, so I'll give you the survey was likely voters in Wisconsin, a sample size of 616 in Wisconsin, a sample size of 632 in Pennsylvania, and 530 in Michigan. So that would be a margin of error of plus or minus 4.1% to 4.5%. So, kind of the range. And it shows in Wisconsin, for instance, the head-to-head matchup, Joe Biden, 53%, Donald Trump, 40%. Bernie leading Wisconsin over Trump, according to this, 48-41. And Beto, well, I don't really believe this, leading Trump, 45. Beto, look at my teeth getting cleaned, O'Rourke, 45-42. In Michigan.
Yeah, he's being endorsed by all dentists everywhere, I think, right?
Yeah.
He's got the dental endorsement going on.
So in Michigan, actually, it showed Trump up 46-45 over Biden, 46-45 over Bernie, and 48-39 over Beto. And then in Pennsylvania, Biden leading 50-43 over Trump. Bernie tied with Trump 44-44, and this is also interesting that Trump beats Beto in Pennsylvania, according to this poll, 47-40. So what this suggests is of these three, the one that this poll would say, Wisconsin, President Trump in trouble, according to this poll. Pennsylvania, President Trump in trouble, but only in trouble against Joe Biden. Now, you know Joe Biden is from Scranton, Pennsylvania, originally. He moved and he went to Syracuse Law School where he...
How could I not know? He mentions it every other day,
I'm from
right?
Scranton.
Guy from Scranton.
I'm from
exactly,
Scranton. Yeah. And my dad worked in the coal mine and his grandfather worked in the coal mine. And
Almost as bad as John Edwards used to talk about his dad. You know, I'm a son of a textile worker. Of course, most people in the South were at one time.
Yeah.
You know, they like to talk about those grassroots, right?
Grassroots.
The everyday guy.
It's like John Kasich. Did you know his father's a postman? Was a postman?
Who was the bartender guy? That was Boehner, right?
Boehner,
John
yeah.
Boehner. Yeah,
Boehner,
my dad was a bartender.
My dad was a bartender. Bartender. So okay.
Yeah, you never say. Now Trump never said my dad was a rich billionaire guy. I don't know if he says that. Maybe he did. But most of them try to go with I come from the low roots and move up the ladder.
Yeah.
Kind
well,
of
his yeah. dad was a rich millionaire, multi-millionaire, but not a billionaire like he is. So he moved up in
okay,
the world.
All right.
So, but now let's just say if this is the case, and I kind of think. As we're looking at these states, these are the three most in-play states, I think, right now, as of this weekend, the last weekend of March of 2019. It looks like Florida is moving towards Trump because of the Hispanic population there.
Yeah, I was going to add Florida to your list, but I totally agree with you.
Yeah.
I think you've nailed the real close ones, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so what happens in terms of the Electoral College if this is the case? So remember, it was like 306 to 232 before the faithless electors jumped in with a Trump victory Electoral College-wise. So if Trump loses Pennsylvania, that's 20 votes. So then it goes to 286, right? So he's still president. And then if he loses Wisconsin, that's 10 Electoral College votes. And so that goes down to 276. He's still president. But if he loses Michigan, it's sayonara, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a nail-biter more than likely. I mean, unless there's some great shift in the electorate that, you know, maybe some event that occurs that we don't see. For example, a major... international event could work in the favor or even against the president, you know, between now and then or something. So, but I agree with you. Just looking at it as if it were today, you know, people have seen President Trump in operation in the White House. So we don't have that situation. Well, I don't know if he'll be the guy we want or not. And then, like I said earlier, I think that he got the benefit of the doubt with Hillary. And so it'll be maybe the Democrat that they'll have to decide. You know, who they
exactly.
haven't seen. Yeah. And so that, you know, whether that'll be a determining factor. But right now, it'd be a really close race, no matter who President Trump runs against. And I guess we'd be in for another long night, right?
I think so. A year and a half or so in advance. Who knows? I mean, things are likely to change dramatically. It could be a Trump landslide, actually. It really could be, at least an Electoral College landslide, because he's just on a roll. I mean, he got off of the Mueller report, no Russian collusion, having stopped ISIS in Syria. I mean, a lot of major victories going on. He's still got the communication with North Korea. It's all looking pretty good. The economy's good. All these things are looking good. Now, just as a sort of a business note from from the battlegroundstatenews.com, you know, that's a website for all what's going on in all these 17 states. And our company has a separate site in Tennessee, the Tennessee Star. We already have a site in Minnesota, the Minnesota Sun. We also have a site in Ohio, the Ohio Star. Well, we've really, our next sites in 2019, the next site we put up will be the Michigan Star, and then followed by the Wisconsin Star. I think probably by the end of 2019 we'll be in both Michigan and Wisconsin. And it makes sense, doesn't it? Because that's where this election, and all of the polling seems to indicate this. Now let's talk about Michigan. So in this poll, actually, of course, it's all within the margin of error.
Let me ask you something as you're going down this, because is President Trump sort of a unilateral type candidate, or do we look at other factors? Because you mentioned Wisconsin, you know, where Scott Walker lost the governor's race. Can we look at some of these other races of Republicans and say how things maybe are going? Or is it I'm thinking that Trump is kind of unilateral out there, right?
Oh, yeah. I would agree with that. There's only one Donald Trump, just as there's only one Barack Obama. Right. And many in the world will say, well, thank goodness there's only one of that guy, right? But on the other hand—
But there you have it. He was popular, but then the people voted the Republicans in,
yeah.
Right, over his—he went out there and campaigned for everyone and kept losing races.
Yeah, so I think Donald Trump is unique. I think he can help on the margin with some candidates. I don't think he helps a candidate who's a rhino, actually. I think if Donald Trump can help a candidate who is a strong Trump supporter, but you know because politics is politics, he will sometimes go in and help a candidate who's not always been a strong Trump supporter, and I don't think that really helps that candidate. People know the local guys, and if the guy's on the Trump. Supporting the Trump agenda, it's pretty obvious. And so the Trump's endorsement, I think, matters a great deal if he comes in to support somebody who's on the Trump agenda. Less so if he's supporting somebody who's not really on the Trump agenda. And I think the election in Florida of Ron DeSantis as governor really proved that point. Hey, when we come back, we're going to talk more about Michigan and the president's feisty rally there this past week. You're listening to the Battleground State Report with Michael Patrick Leahy and Doug Kellett, back after these messages.
You're listening to the Battleground State Report.
All right, welcome back. Doug Kelly along with Michael Patrick Leahy. Steve Gill is off this week as we focus on the states that will make the difference in the 2020 presidential election and focusing on some of the issues and stories out there that that may influence and actually direct how voters do in the 2020 election. And Michael was going over, some of these states in the Midwest, Michigan, Wisconsin, of course, Pennsylvania, not in the Midwest, but it's a key state. Florida could be a key one in the South. Do you see anything else or any other state out there that there may be a change? I know we mentioned Colorado is, for example, a battleground state, and it certainly is a state that that can be and has in the past been a red state, but then it's gone blue. So
it could. I think it'll depend on events that have yet to unfold. A danger that President Trump could lose would be Arizona. Arizona, they elected Kirsten Sinema, the far-left senator, Democrat. So he only won by 3.5 points. So Arizona, there's a big concerted effort there. And of course, you've got this Red for Ed socialist embedded in teachers union group that started in Arizona. They're very politically active, and of course, Red for Ed is in essence, as I've written in my Breitbart articles, in essence, it is an attempt to influence the outcome of the 2020 presidential in these battleground states. So, might have an influence in Arizona in particular. But the key here. I think, this poll from Firehouse Strategies and Optimus, looking at Minnesota, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. I mean, if you're going to pick three states, the three most battleground of the battleground states, I think it's these three right now. And if President Trump, if nothing changes, but President Trump loses all these three states, he will not be reelected. And if he wins one of them, he will be reelected. And I think that one right now, where at least according to this poll, he's in best shape is Michigan, where he's got a 1-point lead over Joe Biden, 46-45, and a 1-point lead over Bernie Sanders, 46-45. Of course, that's within the poll's 4% margin of error, but he has got a big lead over Francis Robert Beto, O'Rourke, 48% to 39%. But now Michigan. The president was up there, rally in Grand Rapids this past week. And Doug, it was a huge rally, and I'm just looking at this piece at the
No
gate.
Collusion, no collusion.
No collusion.
The no collusion rally, that's what I'm calling it.
In Grand, and now Michigan is like a lot of states now where you've got the urban areas that are dominated by left-wing liberal Democrats and then the suburban and rural areas that are very Republican. And so President Trump went to Grand Rapids, which is, I think it's what, about 100,000 people in Grand Rapids. It's in sort of central western, southwestern Michigan. It's more of the rural area. It's more of, you know, classic Midwest. It's not the urban part of Michigan. But the crowd was huge. I think the facility accommodated 14,000 indoors, and there were nearly 20,000 in the streets. This is what Brad Parscale, the head of the president's reelection campaign, tweeted out yesterday. Big, huge crowds. We've seen the crowds, and they've not lost their enthusiasm for the president. He's winning in many regards. The Mueller report turned out to be a giant nothing burger, and all of the 2 years of Russian collusion now is evaporating. And
I've canceled my classes on speaking Russian now that the report is over.
Yeah.
I mean, but we got the summary and the president's right to go out there and make as much about it as he can. You know, I'm just wondering. You know, again, it's who the opponent is, because as you point out here, he's beating even though it's close, he's beating Biden, he's beating Bernie Sanders
in Michigan,
In Michigan. Does Biden have, and I've been asking people on social media this, does Biden have a tougher road as far as winning the nomination among some of the far-left Democrats than he would be beating, say, a Donald Trump? Or what do you think? I mean, which one's harder?
I that's a really good question. I think it might be a little harder for him to get the Democratic nomination, even though most of the polls show him, you know, the current leader by about 10 points. Or depending on the poll, 5 or 10 points over second place Bernie Sanders. I don't think he's pursuing his presidential campaign quite with the proper level of intensity to win.
Yeah, he keeps sort of, I may be running, I may not be running kind of thing. That's true, although he sort of made a, misspeak or something one day, sounded like he was running.
What? Joe Biden with a gaffe? I'm shocked. Shocked, Doug.
Hey, he's made a career out of it. I guess you have to pat him on the back, I guess, when he doesn't make one.
Well,
what about, there's been this talk that he's looking at vice presidential candidates already. That is, he may name his VP early on here, not wait if he were to win the nomination and do it then. Stacey Abrams of Georgia's one that apparently he's met with. I don't know who else is on the list here, but what do you think? I think that's sort of desperation in a way, right? Or is he going to try to bring the left of the party with him because he really doesn't, he's been in Congress a long time or in the Senate. He doesn't necessarily represent all the far-out ideas that some of them have, the younger generation?
I just think it's too clever by half to do that. And if you look at the history of this sort of thing, it doesn't really have much impact. It looks odd because, what difference does a vice president make, really, right, in terms of the overall agenda and policy? I mean,
well, they go to funerals. What does Mike Pence do? That's a good question. What is Mike doing?
Let's go back.
Good question.
Let's go back on the history of vice presidents until Walter Mondale in 1976, won that election as vice president and became vice president January of 1977. The vice presidency has, as John Nance Garner put it, John Nance Garner was Franklin Delano Roosevelt's vice president from 1933 to 1941. Garner, a Texan and former Speaker of the House, said, the vice presidency wasn't worth a warm bucket of spit. Remember that? Do you remember that one?
No, I didn't. But that's a great line. Yeah, well, and of course they picked him a little differently back then, right? Because when Harry Truman got picked for FDR's running, it wasn't FDR picking him; it was the Democrat Party, right?
They structured it that way, at the convention. And the reason was, you know, so John Nance Garner, you know, who said the vice presidency wasn't worth a warm bucket of spit, and he was right back then.
Hasn't changed much, has it?
So what happened was, you know, FDR dumped Garner in for his third term, and he picked a very socialist, communist sympathizer, Henry Wallace, in 1940, and he was vice president. But he was so pro-Soviet that he was considered a national security risk, and that's why basically FDR engineered it to have the convention pick Truman as his vice president for his fourth term. And mercifully, he did, because, you know, Truman turned out to be a pretty good president, all told, except he was
an important one, right?
I mean,
Well, obviously, they're always one heartbeat, as they say, away from being president. So it still matters, you know, who gets the choice for sure. But going back to the Biden thing, you think it is a bit of desperation, perhaps?
It is, because it doesn't really matter. The vice presidency has done more since Jimmy Carter brought Walter Mondale into some policy team. But, you know, in 76, when Reagan ran for the Republican nomination, at the last minute, he named his running mate as Russell Swikert, kind of a establishment guy, senator from Pennsylvania. It made no difference. I don't think it makes any difference at all. Who cares who the vice president is until you got the nomination?
Yeah, good point. We'll be right back as we continue on the Battleground State Report. Thanks for joining us here. Doug Kellett, Steve Gill, Michael Patrick Leahy, and we'll be right back.
It's the Battleground State Report with Steve Gill, Michael Patrick Leahy, and Doug Kellett.
Thank you and welcome back. Steve is off this week. I'm Doug Kellett, the CEO, editor-in-chief of the Battleground Star Report, State Report, I should say, is Michael Patrick Leahy, and we're talking about some of the issues and some of the poll numbers, really, and how things might shape up for the 2020 presidential election. You say, why are we talking about it now? Well, the campaign never stopped.
Oh,
you know, it's sort of the era
me, please. Deliver
it's the era we
me.
Live in. Obama, I say Bill Clinton actually started this because I think, you know, the first George Bush, Herbert Walker Bush, we couldn't get him to campaign for a second term. I mean, that was part of the problem.
He was looking at his watch.
Yeah. I mean, he didn't want a campaign and thought he had a 90% approval rating after the Persian Gulf War and it was going to be a slam dunk. And so Bill Clinton then, once he won, just kind of kept campaigning, even through impeachment, I think. And so that's sort of the era that we live in. Obama did the same thing. I guess President Trump's kind of doing that, right?
You kind of have to, you know. I mean, but it does it's so wearying, isn't it? Oh, what's the poll show today? It's like every day there's a poll showing, you know, what the election's. I kind of, and, you know, this is what we do. We do the news, right? But it's the same story. It's the same story every day, and you just get tired of it. Because you're not really necessarily moving the discussion forward.
How much fatigue plays a role in this? I mean, that's a really good point you're making, because, you know, just talking to people, I mean, it doesn't mean it's the view everywhere around, but people do seem to get tired of sort of the back and forth, right?
Oh, man.
I've always kind of enjoyed it. I even used to watch Crossfire, you know, way back when.
But that was interesting. Yeah. Crossfire was interesting. This is all, you know, horse race stuff. It's not necessarily about issues. It's about personalities. It's about, you know. And
you know, the president mentioned health care this week.
Yeah.
The GOP will be the party of health care. Well, I kind of feel like we had our chance to knock out Obamacare and we didn't do it, right? We Supreme Court let us down. Then we came up with, once the president got elected, and then John McCain voted no on this thing in a close way, the president maybe is going to bring this back up. So is that going to be a a big issue in the campaign, do you think?
Well, the president seems to think that's important, and I think you're right about the timing. I mean, it should have been done first month of the Trump administration, but not a lot of help from the Republicans in the Senate, that's for sure. So I think you're going to see the president attempt to make it an issue. Not everybody thinks that should be the main issue. I was listening to Rush Limbaugh the other day, and Rush said, you know, okay, that's fine and well. That's not the defining issue, Mr. President. The defining issue needs to be immigration and the crisis at the border. If you only have one issue to pick, I think Rush is probably right on that. I can see what the president's trying to do. He's trying to fix the problem of Obamacare, which is, you know, continuously a disaster. But politically, I think Rush is right. I think make it about the immigration. And we do have a crisis at the southern border. I mean, the number of illegals coming in is growing and growing. And I think focusing on that allows you to contrast yourself from all of the, you know, disconnected from reality Democrats who are saying no crisis at the border. So who are you going to believe, the Democrats or your lion eyes?
Yeah, and this week at the No Collusion rally in Michigan, the president said that if Mexico doesn't pay for this thing, he's going to close the border down.
I think that's actually probably a good move.
I was going to say, do we take him at his word on this, or is he just shouting from the rooftops? How do you shut the border down exactly?
Well, you just don't let anybody in, and you don't let any trucks in, and it becomes a big mess. But let's look at this. So the reports are the number of illegals are up and all the associated problems. The number of illegal aliens crossing into the United States over the southern border is up significantly during this year. That's a crisis. And the president is going forward, I think, with some policies that are, you know, very good in trying to stop that. And the Democrats are being portrayed accurately as the people who just don't see the reality or don't care about the reality because apparently they want those illegal aliens to vote Democrat, right? Now, the president, however, has been taking action steps. Just this past week, the Pentagon, we've talked about this before, Doug, the Pentagon announced that, yep, we're going to reallocate $1 billion, that's with a B, $1 billion from other authorized and appropriated congressional expenditures, properly authorized and appropriated. Those expenditures now that may have gone for military barracks or other military equipment, because we can under the law, and as the Congressional Research Service pointed out in a January of 2019 report, we're moving it over to build the wall. And that's happening. It's that $1 billion now is being deployed, not through the national emergency element, but it's being deployed to build 57 more miles of wall. And apparently it's going to be like 18 feet high. That's a pretty good wall.
Yeah, and for those who've been complaining that the Pentagon budget's being, you know, utilized in this fashion. That's just one. You look at the F-35 fighter, it costs just over $1 billion. That's just one less fighter. You know, I mean, it's not significant in the role of the Pentagon defending the country in other places. So they're defending the country along the border. It's a proper use of Pentagon funds. It makes you wonder, and I think I've asked you this on our local show, why is, what was the big fuss then? Why go the emergency way if we could have done this all along? Why didn't we go ahead and do it?
Yeah, you're being logical, which is, you know.
I know, I just throw that in every once in a while, along with my illogic the rest of the time. But, I mean, why not? Why did we have this big fight?
Well, yeah, that's a really good question. I suppose you'd have to look at the entire president's agenda, and he was trying to work with the Republican House the first term, and they were doing everything possible under the, quote, leadership of the famous fetal position Republican Paul Ryan. You know, the one who's now on the board of Fox News.
Had to take a little shot at Paul Ryan right there from
Michael
Patrick Leahy.
Cannot resist it.
Have to have some gratuitous shots. You know, I used to take them at Obama, so now we have to take them at Paul Ryan.
Well, he deserves some, right?
What is he doing at Fox? What is he doing on the board of directors at Fox anyway? I haven't figured that
turning
one out
them
yet.
Further to the left, I think. Right?
You get paid for this?
Yeah. But I guess, you know, so. Look, if the entire Republican Party were on the same team and supporting the Trump agenda, we would have you're absolutely right. They would have jammed through in that first session of Congress when they control the House and the Senate. They would have jammed through building a border wall. They would have jammed.
Michael, how is it these presidents make this mistake? I mean, Obama wasted all the political capital and goodwill that he had, you know, being sort of a historical election and everything by, you know, shoving this Obamacare down our throats when we didn't want it. With no Republican votes at all the first 2 years, that eventually, you know, led to the Republicans taking over. Why do you think they make this mistake? Seems like you'd get the plan, let's put this forward, the most important things right away, and get it done. Why do you think they don't do that?
Well, that's what President Trump wanted to do. I have an answer for you. Two words, Paul Ryan. Paul Ryan obstructed the president's agenda. And that's not gratuitous. That's fact.
No, but it didn't. I thought Paul Ryan kept sending bills, even though we knew they were not going to get approved, to overturn Obamacare. Didn't we do that when he was Speaker? Or
they were large. But forget about that for a second. Let's focus on the main element of the building the wall.
Yeah, and I certainly agree with you there. I think Ryan, and I think there are many Republicans who really have never been totally on board with this.
Paul Ryan did not want a wall built. Yeah. He did not. And that's why he obstructed for 2 years the passage of the proper legislation that would have authorized that. Had the Speaker of the House been supportive of the president's agenda, the first thing they would have done is put through a build the wall bill. And it would have been funded and there would have been no controversy. But Paul Ryan didn't want it to happen. And so it didn't happen.
Yeah, and you look at the Democrats, Nancy Pelosi, okay, whatever people think about her, the woman does know how to keep her her group in line and get things that she wants passed, right? And what is it about the Republicans and who we pick as Speaker? I mean, Dennis Hastert? Oh, wow, look how that turned out. I mean, you can go even further back. I mean, Paul Ryan, we never get the guys that can really put the hammer down, do we?
Yeah, well, it's just something about, it's sort of like the Bob Michael loser mentality. Remember him, Bob Michael?
Yeah, well, that would have been another one I should have mentioned. Yeah, he was a leader. He wasn't Speaker, but he was a leader.
Minority leader, and basically all he did was say, oh, you Democrats are so mean. You're so mean. You got to like us Democrats. That was about all he did. And so there's no, you know, and basically Newt Gingrich basically, you know, overthrew him and became Speaker.
Yeah, I guess I got to throw Newt in there. Newt was certainly one that got things done until I guess they kind of ran him out a bit. But I mean, he was one that really did get it done. So I shouldn't forget about him.
Sort of did, yeah. I mean, of course, the Newt, you know, there were some personal foibles or problems in mostly his managerial style. He ran into some personal scandals of sorts, but nonetheless, compared to every other Republican Speaker since, he was clearly, Newt Gingrich was the best Republican Speaker of the modern era, really, in terms of getting things done. He didn't get enough done, but he got a lot done. And, you know, the others are like sort of Bob Michael and Dennis Hastert with his own personal scandals that put him in jail for a while, prison for a while. I think he's out of prison now.
But wasn't Paul Ryan sort of a compromise candidate, you know, for Speaker, that some conservatives said, okay, I'll go along with Paul Ryan versus somebody else? But then we never had a consensus on the
Tell you my John Boehner story?
I don't think so.
Well, I'll tell you my John Boehner story.
Did you know that John Boehner's dad was a bartender? Did you know
that? So go back to 2010, and I was, you know, involved in the Tea Party movement. And so we did a whole series of projects to help get conservatives elected, Republicans elected during the general election in 2010. And we had a little project called Election Day Tea Party, which, you know, focused efforts on the key races. And a lot of them ended up winning. And so the Tea Party people felt, I think rightly, that we played a significant role in elevating John Boehner to the speakership. So a bunch of us went into Washington, D.C., and we were supposed to meet with the speaker to kind of discuss strategies. And I remember very clearly. So we're waiting in this room for him to come by. He walked by us, looked at us, and just kept walking on. Like, I don't have time for you guys. You're not important. And that basically was emblematic of
They sort of looked at the Tea Party, and I never understood this as sort of the great unwashed, the Republican sort of group, right? I mean, I don't know why they would have looked that way, because obviously the Tea Party was made up of people who believed in the Constitution,
and got them
limited
elected.
Government,
and
so it helped them get elected.
The bottom line is why we've got so many battleground states now in play is because the Republican Congress last session, headed by Paul Ryan, did not implement the Trump agenda. That explains it, in my view.
All right, we're out of time. Good stuff, Michael. And thanks for joining us, folks, on the Battleground State News Report. Steve Gill will be back next week. We'll talk to you then. And thanks again for joining us on the program.